Welcome, everybody, to episode 4 of the Sports Stooges podcast. I am your host, Sports Guy Jason. And this week, I'm being joined by super producer Tyler Allen, who's also part of the Anomalies podcast. Thanks for joining me this week.
Thanks, bud. I'm going to add my applause. Check it.
Go me. Go me.
Love it. I don't even know if any of my soundboard keys work anymore.
Just a bit outside.
Yeah, I'm not hearing anything, so must not be. I'll have to fix that.
I love my trigger pad. Makes producing the show way easier.
I'll have to re-download all the audio because everything I had was on my old... Well, I might still have it on my MacBook Air. But anyways, we were going to try and do this last Thursday. Kind of had something pop up that threw my schedule off. So sorry, everybody, didn't get episode last Thursday. Like I said, for now, the goal is going to be every other Thursday. And then I'm bouncing around some ideas on how to make this weekly, but do it differently. But we'll get to that another day. Not a lot of sports to talk this week, is there? You know,
no.
We're kind of coming off one of the dead weeks. It's not quite as bad as baseball All-Star Week, where there's literally nothing to talk about, but it's close.
Pretty close, yeah. At least, you know, you don't get like last week where the biggest controversy was, did you like the halftime show? Or should have Matthew Stafford come to that lady's aid who fell off the stage during the parade ceremony?
It's like, the answer is no for that one, because he was, as you know, he was at that point Tom Brady level drunk. So yeah, there's absolutely zero chance
he was shit-faced. The lady had zero self-awareness.
Right. Like, it's not his fault she couldn't figure out where the end of the stage was. And again, he was just not going to be able to help her out. Like, I feel bad for him. He takes such a beating. And then, of course, you know, the world that it is today, everybody has to dig 10 years into her background and start tearing into her. And, you know, that's not to say good, bad, or otherwise about what she said, but what's that got to do with her falling off the stage? Like, exactly. Do we really need to be that as people anymore? Like,
And then you got the distraught Detroit fans who think they still won a Super Bowl because their guy won a Super Bowl, that are mentally sick and putting out Detroit Rams gear. You're like, come the fuck on.
I'm a Cubs fan lifelong. We had some awful years in there. Could have never thought, you know, like, I was glad to see guys do well when they left, but I'd never put on a Chicago Diamondbacks, you know, jersey when Mark Grace finally won a World Series with Arizona. Not going to happen.
Like, you don't see me rocking. Like, I'm a Red Sox fan. Like, when Mookie went to the Dodgers, you don't see me rocking Dodger gear all because Mookie's there.
Like, and I get it. There are some people who are, fans of players as opposed to teams. And I get that exists. But how hard is it to just be loyal? And I could never.
But that's just like, that's upper level, like, mental sickness. Like, I know I'm mentally sick, but when you're pining somebody and making Detroit Rams gear and celebrating the fact that your guy won, that's upper level sickness.
No, for sure. 100%. It's, you know, and I guess it's Stockholm syndrome when you've been that bad that long almost. But again, I couldn't, even at the worst of the Cubs, I could have never have like taken it as almost our championship when one of the guys left and did Greg Maddux to the Braves. Like, there's no way I'm rooting for the Braves in that situation. Sorry.
Right.
That was our guy. We did the work developing him. We should be benefiting from this. We shouldn't be getting buried. But no, not a chance. I mean, Super Bowl was entertaining, since I haven't had a chance to talk about that, you know. Lost pretty much every bet I had on the Super Bowl, other than the coin toss. I did win that.
I picked the score, but, like, apparently, like, two of the contests I really wanted to enter, granted they were on TikTok, I literally guessed the score, 23-20 Rams, because I was a big Mad Dog listener, and he was pining, he's all like, it's going to be a close game, it's going to be like a 17-20, 23-20 type of game, and I was like, oh, I'm honing in on that, it's going to be 23-20. So I entered it in. Apparently, I didn't enter it in on the wrong TikTok, but I was literally pointing it out to people going, like, this is the fucking final score. I was like,
it's like, this is it. Check it out. Like, I told you.
And it's like, I did it 3 days before the fucking TikTok went up anyway.
And you guys don't have sports gambling in Nebraska. You're in Nebraska, right?
Correct.
And you guys don't have sports gambling yet, do you?
No, but, like, it's kind of like at this weird spot because casinos are going to start making income or going to start coming here. They have to be attached to horse racing tracks. And we've got a few of those. So, like, allegedly there might be a push to make some sort of sports betting legal, not over the app, but it's like the bit where you have to go into the casino and place it at a book. But most of the betting I do, I usually go into Council Bluffs because, like, Council Bluffs is like the only liberal casinos in Iowa. So,
yeah, that's it. Indiana surprises me still, by the way, that we were one of the first states with online sports betting because, you know, it took to like 5 years ago when we had the Super Bowl for us to be able to buy beer on Sunday. I was like, we were so far behind on that, and I don't know how we got ahead of sports gambling, but that started, we had the river boats, and then you had to go to in-person casino, and then like 6 months later, they rolled out the online.
Yeah, so allegedly, the university is going to make a push, because they sent out a survey asking people, it's like, how important is checking your sports bets while you're at the game? That'd be very important. Like, I would like to place, like, if I'm at the game and it's 11 o'clock slate, I'd like to place other 11 o'clock game bets.
Right. I'd be like, hell yeah. And again, the states are just seeing huge tax revenue benefits from it. But yeah, you know, it's nice. You know, like, I've gone to Illinois during games and I haven't had a chance to go to a casino because in Illinois, you have to physically go to a casino to be verified as who you are before you can place a bet online. It's like, this is awful. Like, I just had to take a picture with my ID, you know, in Indiana. They're like, here you go. Yeah, sure. Go nuts. You know your social security number. Gamble.
The times I went, like, I could, because, like, they have FanDuel and they have Caesars out there and, like, a few other ones. The Barstool book wasn't out there yet. But, like, I literally just went to the book and just, like, literally placed the bet out there. But apparently you just have to be geotagged in Iowa. So
yeah, that's all Indiana is. Upload your ID, give us the last four of your social security number, and be in the state, and you're fine. I did finally, like, I used the Super Bowl as an excuse to use the free promos from BetMGM and Barstool, which didn't work out well for either of them, because BetMGM gives you, bet $10, win or lose, you get four free $50 bets. So, like, cool. And now if you use FanDuel, when you get the free bet, you get to keep the bet money as well if you win. So, like, if you had a $50 and you win, so, like, the first bet I placed with BetMGM was like on the Bucks minus -1,000. Figure, okay, I'll win $5, but I'll take my 50 with me and go. And they're like, no, you don't get that. You just get the five. So I was like, all right, I took the other three and placed them on NBA long shots, you know, just boom, boom, boom. Oh, guess what? Pistons beat Celtics plus +600. Here's your $300. Like, see, would have been cheaper for you just, let me take the 200 and run.
The only bets I placed this year were for the Nebraska-Michigan State game. And then I placed a futures bet when I first started at the data center. And it was for the now Washington Commanders to win the NFC East. That would have been like 15,000.
Oh, that'd have been nice.
Yeah. And I think that's going to be a long-standing bet because I think I'm going to keep doing that. It's like a traditional thing.
I think I'm going to do, yeah, I haven't done any futures yet, but I think this will be the year where I start betting division winners in football and things like that that are a little more lucrative, but just take longer to pay out.
There's a lot of stupid money you can get out of that. I didn't think there was, but, like, when you're looking over the futures, you're just like, oh,
yeah,
you just have to guess this and I hit and I win. Hell yeah.
Oh, put together four NFL division winners. You turned $10 into $10,000 real quick. It's like, all right, I'll try this. No problem. It's like every day I place one NBA first basket score parlay, you know, dollar. If ever one of them hits, it's a minimum six figures. Like, I've never had one that was under like 140,000 to win. It's like, sure, I may lose every single day, but at the end of the year, it's what, $120 by the time you're through the NBA season?
Easily.
Most people spend more than that on the lottery.
Like, I just be selectively betting overs. I only did that a handful of times too.
I mean, NFL season was good to me. It would have been really good to me if it wasn't for the Bengals being idiots against the Chiefs. But I got really lucky. First week, I hit a really nice same game parlay for like $1,200. So I put it, you know, I only put in $100 to start the NFL season. I hit that, pull out $800 right away, and never had to make another deposit the rest of the NFL season.
That's the life.
And I really would have been in good shape. Like I said, against the Bengals, I had a same game parlay that was going to pay me a little over $1,500 on a $10 bet. And all I needed, all I was missing was the Joe Mixon touchdown. And that's when they ran quarterback sneak, then gave him the ball, and then had the penalty and was able to run the clock out. And the only other...
something else too.
And then I had the bad beat to end all bad beats was the divisional round parlay. I parlayed all four underdogs, and I was 13 seconds away with the Bills till Leslie Frazier played the dumbest defense, and that man still owes me $400. I've never been that person to like tweet at some athlete like, hey, you cost me a bet, because they didn't. I made the bet. Leslie Frazier cost me that. Like, you're playing sidelines defense with 13 seconds, and they have all their timeouts. It makes no damn sense. Like, yeah, I get it. They're going for the sideline, but they have their timeouts. Let them have the sideline in 5 yards.
Yep.
They needed the 30 down the middle you gave them, idiot.
That just reminds me of the Michigan game against Nebraska. So I got in. I went to Omaha to interview for a place. So I went across the river and placed a $30 bet. I was like, I got in at 2.5 points. They won by a field goal. I was like, fuck.
Yeah, two and a half is one of those tricky numbers. Like, so tricky. Usually, if I'm betting, if I'm going to bet a +2.5, I'm going to buy it up to +3.5. Like, get me over the field goal. Like, and just the opposite if I'm betting the favorite. Like, I'm going from -3.5 to -2.5. I'm willing to give up a little vig to get a better number.
I was expecting it to not jump a whole point like it did, but yeah. I was... At the same time, I was like, I know it's going to be a close game. And then when they kicked the field goal with 7 seconds left, I was like, oh, my heart just like dropped.
The bad beats are the worst. Killing me. Telling me. But yeah, then on Barstool, which to me is the most hilarious thing, giving Dave's history with sports betting and my bookie, like they're free bets. You have to roll them over before you can cash out. So like I put one on a UFC fight for a guy to win by submission. He won. So I won that. But then you have to bet it again before you can cash out. So, you know, given that he hated the rollover when it was somebody else doing it to him, it was kind of hilarious to me. So then I picked some college basketball game I'm watching, just put it all on the game on the underdog in the second half, so like +220. So I turned $100 worth of free bets into like 380 by the time it cashed out.
Damn.
Like, you could have just let me have the 140 I had after the UFC fight. No.
I guess parlaying it and having to roll it over ain't that bad.
Worked in my favor that time. But what they're hoping is you can't win the two bets in a row.
Right.
But it worked out in my favor. I was like, all right, well, this works. I'll take my money back.
What basketball game was it?
Oh, you're going to make me log in now. Sacramento State versus who? Oh, God. I honestly don't remember.
Oh, I figured you'd be like a homer and bet some sort of Indiana basketball.
Oh, God, no. I refuse to bet IU basketball. The same. I will not bet IU basketball, Notre Dame football, Pittsburgh Steelers football. Those are the three I don't touch. I don't trust IU in any sport, and their basketball team has been so up and down. There's no chance. Sacramento State at Idaho State.
Jesus.
This is who it was, yeah.
Wacky Mountain West type action.
Like, I was just, like, once I realized I had to roll it over, I was just like, all right, what's on? What's on ESPN that I can watch, and what's on the app? All right, boom, here you go. Thanks for like making me play.
Tuesday when we were recording with Wayne Jetski, I was watching Nebraska play Northwestern, and Nebraska's like dead last in the Big Ten, like 1-15. And it was just like the worst basketball I've ever seen in my life. And they announced today that they're keeping Fred Hoiberg for another season.
Yeah, of course.
Why not? I'm just like, ugh. You're really pushing Nebraska fans to become Creighton fans.
Like, well, and it's just, again, it's not like any of the Big Ten schools don't have the money right now. You know, their TV contract is ridiculous. And the rumor is the next one's going to be over $1 billion.
Easily.
Like, no excuse to keep bad coaches in the Big Ten in any sport at this point. Like, I get it. Fred Hoiberg was good at Iowa State for like 2 years. That was a decade ago, though. What are you counting on now?
He got pulled from the bowls when we hired him. Wow, I thought was wacky enough. So that's why I pledge allegiance in terms of basketball to all things Creighton and Greg McDermott.
Yeah, I use ninth in the Big Ten right now. I remember when they hired Woodson, I told people that was going to be a bad hire. My friends are, oh, you'll be great. He's an NBA coach. I'm like, he won a good one.
Right?
Like, oh, but he was a Bob Knight guy. Like, who cares? That was 20 plus years ago, too. Like, you got to give up chasing the past.
And plus, Creighton's like the more exciting team.
Oh, no. They've been great in college basketball for a couple decades now, pretty consistently.
Yep. And like they're trying to work out a deal where their coach, Greg McDermott, it can be his last job and like sign him to like a lifetime contract of sorts, sort of thing.
Makes sense.
So also I'm stoked to be moving to Omaha so that I can go see more basketball.
Oh, is that where you, Did you finally get something all squared away?
No, I've got a lot of, like, it's all been interviews. Tons of interviews, and, like, a lot of people that like me enough, but it's just, like, they don't like me enough to hire me yet.
Been there and done that more times than I care to deal with. It's like, yeah, you were great, but we just like this one other person. You could have told me it was 100 people at that point. Like, don't tell me it was down to me and one other person. Like, I hate that the worst.
But I'm excited because it's like I can actually be in a city where there's actually a sports team where I can actually like go and support.
Yeah, no, that's probably the one thing I missed from living in Charlotte when I lived there. It was just like I could get off work and I was 10 minutes from the Hornets Stadium tops, you know. Never went to a Panthers game, and that felt weird as a Steelers fan. You know, at least got to see like LeBron play and can't remember, you know, who else. But you know, back then the Hornets weren't good, so I could get tickets for like $6 in the game. Like, all right, up, done from work. Oh, game's getting ready to start. All right, I'll take the train up there real quick.
Like instead of making an event and like having to do an overnight trip, it's just like, right. Oh, and that's like, why do you like Creighton? Because they're not in Nebraska.
Like, is there that's anywhere but here?
Because they're basically Omaha-based university. Even though I didn't go to the university, still way better than Nebraska ball right
now. Man, I was looking at this weekend's UFC Fight Night card. It is bad.
Yeah.
Really, really bad. The only fight of any note is Makhachev versus Green. Of course, Green being a last-minute fill-in is, of course, plus 550.
Because who was he supposed to face before?
Benny Dariush.
That's who it was. I was looking forward to that.
Yeah, I mean, like, there'll be some interesting fights on here, but there's literally anybody's going to know unless you watch way too much UFC.
Because, like, especially this match is essentially a freaking rematch from earlier in Makhachev's career.
Yeah.
But the card that I'm looking forward to is March 5th.
Yeah, it's not a bad card, but I don't think the main event's going to be worth anything.
I think it'll become a lot more when they get in front of the press and start mouthing off against each other.
But see, that's my problem right there is you know both of them are so fake at this point. Like, it's just, I don't care. Like, you're both playing characters. Like, you guys, I mean, Colby at least admits it. Like, so that's great. We know who you are. Like, you do it because you knew you were going to get cut. Jorge, I think, irritates me more because he tries to pretend he's not playing a character.
Right.
Like, admit you're playing the character to make the big paycheck. Nobody cares. Like, Chael Sonnen was very clear that the bad guy was a character, but it made him a lot of money and he didn't care. Like, half of this is a business. You got to market the fight and that's how you do it. Like, that's fine. But don't pretend. I mean, unless again, you're the Diaz brothers who just somehow are inordinately interesting to everybody by being like treating the press like it's a waste of your time. And, like, you just don't care about anything and it's just authentically who you are, and then that somehow works. I don't know how, because again, it doesn't work for anybody else. And
I mean, that's the longevity they have, I think, is how it works.
Well, yeah, I think you have some respect as some true OGs in the sport when you really get down to it. I mean, but Masvidal was too, and it didn't help him any.
Yeah.
You know? Until 2019, most people would have known who he was if they walked past him in a food court.
But now he's just the cat that KO'd Ben Askren with a head kick and then got knocked out by Kamaru Usman.
Yeah. Again, a really bad look for somebody who talks about their knockout power to get, I mean, and slept hard. We're not talking a little bit. We're talking slept hard. Yeah. I guess, actually, I was just looking at that card. They shaped that card up pretty nicely for 272 there. I mean,
it's not that bad.
No, because you got Dos Anjos versus Rafael. I'm not trying that last name. F-I-Z-I-E-V, and he's good. That'll be a fun one.
That's closer than I could have got it. So go you.
Then you get Barbosa versus Bryce Mitchell, which will be a fun one. Barbosa is just always entertaining to watch, and he's made me a lot of money, particularly on that one delayed knockout. I still can't, like, guy's brain just waited a little bit to shut off. Like, got punched straight in the temple and just stands there and then just slowly falls down. It's like, hey, that's gonna pay me like plus 250. Let's go.
Yeah, him and Bryce Mitchell are gonna bang, and it's gonna be it's gonna be a good time.
The interesting one, I think, will be Holland versus Oliveira, Alex Oliveira. because that'll be Holland's first fight at welterweight. And Oliveira typically wants to take it to the ground, which we know Holland has struggled with but been working on. You know, we saw some good things before his last fight went no contest from that headbutt. And then the end one, it's Spivak versus Hardy. And I think we just all know everybody wants to see Greg Hardy get knocked out again.
Because we hope he gets fucking cut after this fight.
I thought he was going to after the last one, to be honest. Like, no, I guess it works, right? People tune in to watch him get knocked out. It drives ratings. I just don't know why you'd put him on a pay-per-view at this point. Like, at least throw him on a fight night so that way people would boost the ESPN numbers for you. Because if that dude deserves every bad thing that ever happens to him.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, there is a case to be made for it happened, it's the past, let it go, unless you do what he did. Like, there's no forgiving that. Sorry. You literally choked a woman, threw her on top of a pile of guns. You're human garbage, and you don't deserve to be thought of as anything but human garbage. And it's just one of the things that drives me nuts about Dana White. Like, you didn't need the ratings boost from him. You could have let somebody other organization have him, or let him stay in the minor leagues forever. He didn't need to be in the UFC.
Hell, even the prelims got some bangers. Yeah. Jessica Ivers, Manion Fury. Manion will probably clean Jessica Eye's clock within two rounds, but it'll still be a good fight nonetheless. And then I'm pretty sure this is Umar. I want to say it's Khabib's cousin.
Cousin, yeah.
Against Brian Kelleher.
I can't believe Kelleher's plus 450 in that. Like, I get it, it's Nurmagomedov, but like, it's not Khabib. Yeah, Jessica is going to get absolutely smoked, and hopefully it'll be her end of her run in the UFC too. Devontae Smith will be a fun one against Gonzalez. Yeah, you're right. The early prelims. Tim Elliott is on the early prelims.
Yep. Again, I'm not going to try and pronounce his opponent's name. Tagir.
Yeah, no. Not even delving into that world. Nope. Some Russian guy.
Some Russian guy with one loss.
A lot of Russian guys on this card. Maybe. We'll have to see if they can get visas at this point. Well, regular prelim. I would say the early prelims are better than the regular prelims.
That's a very true statement.
It's odd. I mean, I guess it's a good way to make sure people turn into the early prelims. But
then give them a nice map for the prelims.
Yeah. Here you go. Turn into Fight Pass. Watch the prelims. Take a nap. Come back for the $75 pay-per-view. If you do that, which you should, because nobody should ever use any websites like streameast.io. Never use those. It's very bad. Make sure you don't use a VPN either. Very bad idea.
Or make sure you have a VPN on your router. Don't know what that technology consists of.
Yeah, don't do those things. Never. Those, you know, ESPN and Dana White need your $75 because they're keeping 80% of that $75 that they take because they're not giving it to the fighters. God forbid they pay them at all. Like,
it's because there was a Wall Street Journal article about like the economics of the UFC and ESPN deal. Every single event in this new, ESPN exclusive event pays out the same as starting out as like a $500,000 view old school pay-per-view.
Yeah, they're guaranteed a minimum. So even if they put on a 200,000 sale, it's like, okay. And I think that was the final number for, what was it, 270 with Francis and Cyril Gane. I think that one did 200K buys.
Yep.
And they haven't said for 271 yet, but the buy rate was on that.
I reckon we'll get that come next week if I were to venture a guess.
I think they're hiding it because they paid a lot of money to Israel Adesanya. And I don't think they want you to realize he doesn't move the pay-per-view needle like they pretend he does.
Right.
I think they're really afraid to admit that.
Because they were talking about how Israel kind of became comfortable as champ and almost doing the bare minimum to win fights. And how you have to knock him out in order to impress judges enough to maybe turn the tables on the scorecard.
And that happened. I mean, that happens to almost every champion at some point, you know. You've seen it, whether it was George St. Pierre and just wrestling people down for 25 minutes or John Jones just trying to stand at distance and point you up. Probably the only long running champ who didn't do that was Demetrius Johnson, and nobody liked him for some reason. Like, he still went in and did flying arm bars and all this crazy stuff. And they're like, yeah, we're not entertained. We don't care.
Yeah. Hell, that 270 fight with Ngannou and Gane was electric. I thought it was like the greatest thing ever.
Just watching a wrestling Francis Ngannou was interesting, to say the least. Like, I was surprised by the strategy.
This is like Derek Lewis if he could wrestle.
And then we saw Derek Lewis wrestle at UFC 271.
Yeah.
And he actually got himself in trouble by trying to stand and bang, surprisingly. It's like, dude, what you did the first round, take him down. Give it, hold him down. That was
so weird.
270 was an underrated card as well.
Really. I dug it.
First off, Moreno and Figueiredo was just an absolute banger of a co-main five round. And again, you had Matt Favola on the prelims. That made me money.
I did not understand why. I don't understand how Deverson won that fight. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I had it 3-2 the other way. I thought it was close, but I thought Moreno had edged it. On the other hand, I'm sure we'll get a fourth one out of that now, since it's 1-1-1.
I mean, that's rare error now, because no bout has gone beyond the trilogy.
No, and there's some that we should have gotten trilogies for we've never gotten, but... No, never. What do you even call a fourth fight? But again, it's the rare situation, right? It's 1-1-1. You really need the fourth to break the tie.
Yeah, and allegedly Moreno switched camps, so that's what makes me even more building up more anticipation for me.
Yeah, but I don't know that he did just change camps. Like, I thought he was fine for that fight, you know?
He did everything right. I thought he could have done more, but I thought he did enough to at least keep it out.
Yeah, I mean, fair enough. You can, again, though... I always try to remind myself these guys are getting punched in the face while they're trying to do more. It's not like they're doing against zero resistance. I mean, I think they tried to go a little too wrestling heavy.
Yeah.
And have him, you know, like you got the submission win the first time. Well, second time, technically, because you knocked him down, not because you took him down. Like, remember what got you there.
Then when does Ultimate Fighter start?
Oh, did you see Misha Tate won Celebrity Big Brother?
Oh, yeah.
$250,000.
For a month's worth of work.
Yeah, that's insane. Like, it's probably rival some of her biggest paydays.
That's gotta be close to what she got paid as VP of One. That's gotta be close.
Yeah, I'll bet you it's more.
Because when she retired, she got offered, I think she was a VP of Competition for One Championship over in Asia.
Yeah, that's what she was doing. And then that's where Mansouri went, too, over to when he left Pat. Can't see anything on when Tough 30 starts, though. Tough 30, that is insane to think about. Nate Diaz came in on Tough 5. Matt Serra, the comeback season, was Tough 4.
Four, yeah. What's even more nuts is Juliana Pena was on Tough 19. And here she is as a coach.
It's going to be an interesting season. Like, obviously, it's not the two they were planning on having do it. And right. I don't, like... The UFC is perplexing me with some of the decisions they're making impulsively at the moment right now. Like, I get that you needed a headliner for UFC 272, but you had other options. You could have left. Now, I think that would have been worth the price of admission to have keep it as Colby and Jorge for the coaches of Tough. That would have been worth it.
I think that was the original plan, if I were to venture a guess.
It was. It absolutely was. But I don't think it was worth breaking it up for 272. Like, that literally came down to the fact that Dana White is not letting Nate Diaz fight his last fight on his contract if it's not Conor McGregor trilogy. Because you could have put Nate Poirier on that headliner and it would have sold as many as it will with Colby and Jorge. And then you would have had had a better revenue out of Tough season 30 with Colby and Jorge than you will out of Amanda and Juliana Pena. So I really think that just came down to Dana White trying to protect the Conor McGregor Nate Diaz trilogy.
I also think, like, the only question I have for this Jorge Covington fight is the BMF title just irrelevant now?
Yeah, no, that's not a thing. And Dana admitted it was a one-off when he did it, so it was never going to be a thing.
Because, I mean,
it was literally something.
It would have added stakes to it, and it would have made it somewhat more interesting.
I don't think that. Ultimately, I think Jorge's going to get five rounds of what he did the first fight against Kamara against Colby. I think Colby is so I don't like Colby Covington as a personality.
Nope,
but like as a fighter, he is so skilled. Because I didn't know you'd done music producing stuff before. Like, I knew you'd done all the podcast stuff, but never knew you did music stuff.
What kind of music? How I got Logic certified and got, I want to say, 2009. Yeah, and so with that, I was able to sell a local rapper from Colorado who went to school here for football into being his engineer for a couple of years. And with that, of course, collabs would come. And with that would be more work of, hey, I gotta get this radio ready. Can you edit the expletives out of the song so we can get it radio ready? And just started from there. From there, I went on to producing a bunch of bands locally around here. Like the house that I used to live in, like we turned it into a pretty big recording studio. where I'd have drums on the top floor, guitar out in the garage, vocalist was down near me, and we would record full-length albums. And then the last iMac I had crashed shortly after a recording session. And then I did a death metal band with my MacBook Air, which that gave it a nice little workout. And then from there, those were demo sessions that got turned into an album. And then from there, that's around the time when I helped Tyreek Hill take over a camera and then got asked to do podcast stuff. And I was like, I mean, I listened to a fair amount of them. I never really pull one together, but I was just like, fuck it, let's fuck around and find out, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and like for me, my stuff with podcasting started, there's an old episode of Ari Shaffir Skeptic Tank with him and I'm drawing a blank and I shouldn't be. He's absolutely hilarious. The really big comic who passed away a couple years ago.
Oh, I should know this because it's like I listen to enough comedy stuff.
Oh, I absolutely devour comedy stuff. This is embarrassing. But anyways, you know, on there, he basically broke down, here's the equipment I use. Here's the editing stuff I use. Here's how I put these episodes out. You know, and this is in 2013. I don't remember anymore. But then I was like, okay. So I went out and bought all that stuff and away I went. I mean, it's surprisingly, you know, podcasts, depending on how you want to do it, can be very easy or very hard. Like you can just rip the audio completely, just fix the levels, turn up the audio, you know, turn up the volume a little bit and off you go.
And like a lot of it, like especially since we were all remote, or at least a lot of my podcasts were, like there was a couple that I would shed in the garage, but a lot of them were remote. And so like you had to figure out if I can get everyone into a room and there's like zero latency between us, it should turn out to be a halfway decent product.
Yeah, well, that was, you know, I think that's been the big equalizer over the last couple of years with everybody being forced remote. Like it's changed the game now, where I think almost people don't even anticipate you being in the room with your guests anymore, when that used to be just the absolute expectation was that you were in the same place at the same time as the person you were interviewing. And I just found it is Ralphie May. That's who I was thinking of. Absolutely embarrassed that I didn't think of that one. And then, of course, in true hilarious internet being undefeated, you know, I just type in large comedians. You know, you get the standard John Candy, John Belushi, Rodney Dangerfield, Ralphie May, then Amy Schumer. It's like the internet's undefeated, constantly undefeated. All right. Fair enough. Not where I would have went with that, but hey, it's funny.
I've just logged into my old SoundCloud and I'm like, I totally forgot about all this because I was like, let's see if I don't want to rip off somebody's ears. Yeah. You know what it is. Yellow. Like I put like that one I put together, and it's like because our university here is blue and gold.
Yeah.
And the rapper was on the football team, so we put together a, you know, blue and gold, as called it blue and yellow, and as a play on the black and yellow, black and yellow. Yeah. Cool.
Yep.
And then he goes, because like he comes up to me, he's like, hey, I put together this song and I think it's very good. And I was like, okay, yes, it's very good. And I'm like, what do you think it needs? I was like, you need some thump, bud.
Yeah.
So we had a compression do it, and the next day it got played on the radio. So it's kind of like a surreal moment.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, ultimately, that's what you're doing it for, right? I mean, granted, in this day and age with Spotify and SoundCloud, there's a lot of ways to make money without having to be, you know, traditionally on the radio. But still, I think anytime you're making something content, when it can get onto what's considered a mainstream format still, I feel like that's just a little bit of a validation for the work you do, right?
That was like the first surreal moments in a line of surreal moments, because I was like, if I can get radio play, as like never have I ever had a product that, you know, my eyeballs have been on this session and I've looked over it tons of times and it's never been played on the radio. And I've had probably 6 or 7 songs played at least on the radio that I know of.
Nice. That's a decent accomplishment. More than most people will ever accomplish in their life. I know I'll never have a song on the radio. I can't produce like that, and I sure can't sing, so I'm out.
And then just getting to meet the people that I've met podcasting to, that's another series of surreal moments.
Yeah. Oh, I, you know, it's amazing how small the world gets. You know, it seems like you get more detached on the internet, but I think it's just a matter of how much you want to communicate with people and how willing you are to meet people, you know, and take that chance, to be honest. You know, obviously I've only met a few of the Anomalies folks so far, but again, like, me and Marco were hanging out a few weeks ago down in Indy, and we're just looking at each other, like drinking it in Todd McComas's kitchen at 4 a.m. in the morning. Like, this is a stupid life that we live, right? Like, you know, if you somehow don't know, Todd McComas worked for Pat McAfee in the early days, did an awesome show, Heartland Radio, when they were on Barstool Radio, and then Heartland Radio 2.0, and then now has his own true crime podcast, and did probably 18 other podcasts in between there. But now he's got another new one getting ready to start out. Finally went back to working for somebody. But like, you start out a big fan of this person, and you just chat with them over the internet, and then one day you're drinking in their kitchen at 4 a.m. Like, world's just cool like that. You know,
I never thought like $20 chef would be another one.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yep. No, he's a fun time to hang out with. But I mean, both of them are great.
That's a life goal, but
like Sean, I got. I mean, obviously there was the Guns Blazing Cookout that I went to last summer at Todd's house with him and Sean there. But then there's one night after I went to stand-up show of Sean's in Fort Wayne, and he was only supposed to do the early show. But so then we were hanging out drinking, and then they're like, hey, you want to do a little spot on the second show? So we hang out and drink some more and just had a blast. And now he's doing his own podcast. This is really good. It's been a fun trip so far with that one. The Big Homie podcast or whatever. That's what he's calling it. Because he was deciding between that and the $20 chef for the podcast. I think he decided he wanted to keep $20 chef, really just the cooking stuff.
As he should.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with having two brands. Like, trust me, there's plenty of people who do in this day and age.
Especially if you haven't seen the album art, I want that fucking suit. I really do.
You know what? No, if there's any comedian suit I want, I want one of Chris Bauer's ones.
Oh.
I want one of those sparkly.
Sparkles.
Like he said, it's definitely a conversation starter wherever you go.
He's apparently got an unhealthy obsession with sparkles, I think.
I don't know.
I've been told.
He's another fun guy to hang out with, though, that's for sure. Like, and I've got to hang out, party with Bert Kreischer at Morty's before when he came through there. That was pretty outrageous.
I really want to go see him.
Oh, it's worth it.
I really do. Like,
I don't know what the stadium or the theater experience is like with him, though. I haven't seen that yet.
The closest place he's coming to me is Red Rocks, so I'd go out there.
I haven't even looked yet where he's coming around here. He usually either hits Indy or Chicago, so it's usually 90 minutes to 2 hours from where I'm at. But yeah, that stand-up I could go watch every weekend if it was close. Like when I was in Charlotte, that was great because they had a great club. So like Steve Renazzisi came through there. Tom Segura, when he was still doing comedy clubs, came through. A few others. I can't, gets to be one of those. You've done so many after a while, it's just like, okay, yep, I can't even remember them all anymore.
Now, if Marco could get to that point.
He's got to get up on stage first,
right?
Like you've had 2 extra years to prepare now. Like it should be an even better first 5 minutes.
It's like, it's not hard. Like even if you do suck, it's not very long.
No, depending on where you go, it's what, 3 or 5 minutes max.
Yeah,
so, like, it's gonna be over before you know it. Like I couldn't do it. I am a dry sense of humor person. And you have to have your own audience almost for that. And an open mic is like, if you listen just to any of the comedian podcasts, they'll tell you open mics just turn into playing to the back of the room because almost everybody there is a comedian. So you're not working on stuff that you would normally take on a stage in front of a regular crowd because comedians don't want to hear that.
I mean, I just tried to work a story and then I saw a dude literally take a knee. And it was around the time where Kaepernick was taking his knees. I literally was like, everybody pull Kaepernick, take a knee. And then that's how I got fucking. That's how I got to start.
And now the crowd's on your side, or at least get your sense of humor. Yeah. Yeah. I'm running out of sports stuff to talk about. I mean,
we can go into the Manila Daytona 500, but.
Oh, we haven't even talked about that. You're right. I was telling, Tanner online, I'm such an Earnhardt guy. I don't watch as much as I used to just because there's no Earnhardts in the field. But the Daytona 500 is still the 500. So you watch, again, you're in, you're out. Because I don't like stage racing, particularly at the plate tracks. Like there's no reason to throw cautions at tracks where literally one turn of the wrist can take out 20 cars like it did basically. Or actually, what, a third of the way into the race? It wasn't that far.
Right.
And it's just then,
like, I'm with you. I don't get stage racing at all. And it's supposed to, when NASCAR did it, it's supposed to simulate like regular ass sports fans and then the whole four quarters / taking breaks aspect of it. And I think it's just taking a lot of strategy out of it.
Way to sell more ad revenue. Basically, that was it. Here, we're going to guarantee some cautions. And it's kind of funny because it's kind of the antithesis of what most younger sports fans want to see. They want to see continuous action. That's why soccer is so popular and it's growing exponentially in the United States, is because you're done in 2 hours in a soccer match.
And they don't take commercial breaks in there either.
No, if nothing else. And in racing, they've done it for years. Go side by side. Yep. Have the race and an ad right next to it. You'll be fine. You know, keep it going. And again, just the length of the races. Like, we started, what, 3 and didn't end until after 8? Like, that's just, I'm 41 years old and that's too long. Like, yeah. No. Like, wrap it up, B. I got stuff to do today. The little box from the Chappelle Show skit. Wrap it up. I know. Like, like I said, some races should be special. The Daytona 500, the Coca-Cola 600. But I don't need to see 500 miles at Atlanta Motor Speedway.
Or Pocono.
Oh, well, luckily they cut that to 400. And that should still probably be, like I said, 300 is a really good number. It's going to get you down to that three-hour time window on some of them, under that for some of the others. It's gonna match what the modern consumer wants. Like, yeah, you may technically have less time to sell ads, but you're going to get more dollars per ad. And you're going to have more eyes on the sport when people can watch start to finish, instead of, all right, I'll watch the first 20 laps, go take a nap, and wake up for the last 20. I don't need to see any of that mess in the middle.
Also, what do you think of the new car?
So far, I think it's all right. Like, you can't tell a lot on a restrictor plate on how it's going to race yet, because obviously everybody's going to be bunched up there. It's got to fix the wheel, you know. We got to find a way to make sure those get put on right and easier. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about a rookie winning the Daytona 500. Like, I feel like it doesn't... It sets an unrealistic expectation for that kid now.
Yeah.
Like, Austin Cindric's a good driver, don't get me wrong. Like, he was talented in the Busch Series, but when you win the Daytona 500, we've seen it with other guys like Trevor Bayne, it just sets the bar so much higher that it doesn't give you time to develop as a driver. Now, I think driving for Roger Penske will help some, but I mean, Trevor Bayne was with Roush and unfortunately caught years where Roush was just wasn't that good as a team, to be honest.
Nope.
And it's pretty much ended. I mean, he's going to drive a few part-time races this year for Joe Gibbs, so he may get another chance yet, but you've seen it too many times. Young guys have too much success too quick. The bar gets raised too high, and then their career washes out because of it. I mean, another example was Casey Atwood. You know, he won a bunch of those Busch races early, gets into a Ray Evernham ride in Evernham's first year, and was wildly inconsistent because they were still developing the car, and then gets pushed to second tier equipment for the next year, and then after that, he's out of cup altogether. And I don't even think he raced in a Busch race after that, to be honest. I think he went back home and ran late models and called it a day. But so I hope that doesn't happen to Cindric. Again, I think he's a good enough road course racer that won't necessarily happen with the way they're putting more road courses on the schedule,
which so I think, do dig. Like I like that a lot.
So I obviously prefer the oval, but if you're going to do road courses, it needed to be like 6, not 2. Like, I always felt like 2 was just forcing it, and you're not giving the guys enough time to get good at it, or B, enough incentive to get good at it. Like, you know, you could be bad at the 2 road courses, and even in the old full season point standings, you could be bad at those 2 races and win a championship. Easily. So they were kind of just irrelevant. But now, you know, when they've added all the different tracks and even the roval kind of modified rovals, that you have to be able to race on a road course to compete for a championship now. It's just not an option. You can't do that. Well, I mean, I guess you could fluke your way into it still, but you're at because the whole championship is fluky enough now.
Especially I'm still trying to wrap my brain around how they structure the points.
Yeah. Oh, well, now they're giving out points for the Daytona duels and qualifying, if you get the pole, gets you point, all these nonsense. Like, I get it. You had one bad year of the championship. What is that, 2003?
Where Matt
Kenseth ran away with it?
Matt Kenseth won the title, but didn't win a race that year.
I thought he still won 2.
Uh-uh.
You're making me look real quick.
I'm pretty sure that was the conundrum that brought along the chase.
I think the problem was they thought he was boring more than anything. Oh, he had 1 win. That was it. Okay. He had 1 win, but he top-fived his way to the championship, which... Yeah, it had always been a thing anybody could have done, but you traditionally had not seen it, you know. So you've seen it once and you overreact to go to a 10-race playoff, which now made most of your races meaningless. And then after that, you go to this 3-3-3-1 playoff, which really made it meaningless. Like, I view NASCAR as golf now. How did you do in the majors? Did you win Daytona 500s? Did you win Coke 600s? Southern 500s?
Okay. I'd like the chase. like when it was the 10 race format, because that's what drew me in, was seeing in 2004 Kurt Busch lose a wheel right before pit entrance and diving into the pit road before the caution came out, and that won him a championship.
2004 was such, you know, again, being in Earnhardt season, that was such a fluky one, because to me, like, you know, Junior gets fined the 25 points at Talladega for literally nothing. I'm sorry. No. That was such an overreaction to the Janet Jackson thing. And then because of that, he races harder at Atlanta, ends up wrecking himself, and that's why he ends up out of the points. And then, of course, the problem with the 10 race chase became Jimmy Johnson learned how to game that system. You know? It's part of why I'll never view his seven championships the same as Earnhardt's or Petty's. Although Petty's are different too, because back then you could run 40 out of the 60 races and win the championship, because they'd run three times a week. It's like, I get it, but it's a different world back then too.
I just wish with all the road courses that they go to now, like the Charlotte Oval, they go to Sonoma, and like they go to Watkins Glen, but like I don't see the need, like, to have the 500 be the oval race and have the, I mean, what used to be the 4th of July race, which now is the middle of August, have that be the Daytona road course race. Cause I think that'd be electric to see these cars go on the road course.
I think they should get three races at Daytona. I think like, first off, modern sports, I think you could move the 4th of July race back to being on the 4th of July every year for Daytona, instead of having it be 4th of July weekend.
That was electric.
And run it under the lights on the oval. And then the next week you could do the road course while you're there. Save the guys a lot of transportation or trips if you want. Or save the Daytona road course for the chase. And now you could have two road courses in the chase. Maybe not make it a championship race, but
like,
you know,
I see why Charlotte's Roval gets in the chase, but why just that one?
It's like, right, come on. It'd be nice to see a second one in there, you know, do one in the round of 16 and one in the round of 8, you know,
like, but it just doesn't make sense to me. But like, because like, one of my bucket list things is, you know, they have the 24 hours at Daytona for like the Rolex series.
Yeah,
is to go buy a can, go rent camper, go into that infield and just party.
I'd love to do a whole speed weeks, like the 2400, the shoot, well, if they bring the shootout back to Daytona, the shootout, the duels, qualifying, the race itself, like, let's do it all. Go down there for eight, 10 days, you know, take it all in. Do the Busch race, the truck race, the ARCA race, whole week of drunken racing.
That'd just be so fun.
It would be a blast. That is for sure. That's got to be on the list. I've seen some pretty far baseball stadiums. Charlotte definitely needed to go to the Roval for the fall race. I had gone to that fall race probably 4 or 5 times. I went to the last one before they switched to the Roval, and it was just empty. It was a completely empty place. It was an awful experience. Like,
That's sad for a Bruton Smith owned track.
The problem was you'd had three races a year there at that time, because you had the 600, you had the all-star race, and then you had,
but apparently everyone was spent for their fall race. They're like, oh, fuck this.
Well, and just like every other track, they overbuilt during the boom time of NASCAR.
Yeah,
like, instead of saying, hey, let's get extra revenue from the tickets by being able to raise the price, they built more stands, which worked. But then when things leveled out and started to ebb back, you know, then you didn't have that ability to scale back, you know, and the ticket prices never went down to try and fill the stands. The answer was just, we'll tear down the stands now and still be half empty, and then we'll have to figure it out. But I mean, I think they just overbuilt the cookie cutter mile and a halves too. You know, Charlotte suffered from that.
Yeah, that's another thing that I think plays into this whole NASCAR not being captivated, because that's what made the Clash good. It was a half mile on a fucking football field. It's not like a 1.5 mile tri-oval or a 2 mile ridiculously looking oval.
Yeah, no, I wish they would do it, you know, rotate it around, of course. I think that would be the big key. And they're at Auto Club this weekend, right? Or, yeah.
Yep, Auto Club in Vegas.
And Auto Club's the half mile now, right? Did they finish the redo on that?
Well, that's a good question. Because I've always known it as the 2 miler.
Right, but they were tearing it down and converting it to a half mile track. I just don't know if they've got it done.
They
Yep. According to this, it was supposed to be done for 2022's spring.
We'll see it. It'll be something to at least watch.
Yep. And again, now like you don't have any idea what it's going to be like. Now, this is where the new car is supposed to shine, short tracks and road courses. So hopefully, you know, really on something that allows you a full feel like a half mile instead of having to run heat races, you get to see some racing there. But again, I'm kind of glad they got rid of the 2 mile configuration. Like it was a duplicate of Michigan already. And, Michigan had 2 races, then California had 2 races for a while there. So you had 4 races at the exact same track, basically.
And I think an issue we're going to run into with the new car is, especially since we got like more F1 style type of stops with that hub.
Yeah.
Like gas is going to become a premium.
Oh,
because you're gonna be waiting on gas can. You're gonna waiting on your gas man a lot.
Well, I think that's why they went with one less guy over the wall though to make the tire changes slower. And I almost think that was the wrong way to go.
Like,
how about you go the other way? Let them jack up both sides at one time, change all 4 tires, and just wait on the gas guy. Like here you go, whoop, down go. you'll never have anything like F1 where they. Or Indy, where the jack's built into the pit box and just lifts the car right up. But could have had 2 jack guys going up, off, go. So, I mean, that'll be something to see out throughout the season, though, is how that pit stop works, where you have these different guys. And then, you know, only one, because again, you only have 1 tire carrier over the wall now. So you don't have a front and rear. So it's meant to slow the stop down. So, and again, that was done hoping that, you know, it would save money for some of these teams. I don't know. You know, yet they're struggling with the way the hub lines up, because apparently there's some things in the rim where you have to line up on the hub to get it to lock in right. And that was the problem at Daytona, is 2 of them didn't go on right. So it's not just like before where you just line up the lugs, slap it on and go.
Right.
And,
where it's all pressed in there and you just have to literally just get it in there and just fire it up and go.
And I think Dale Jr. even talked about it, you know, it possibly having the unintended effect of actually making cup pit crews more expensive, because before the guys on the cup crew could pit the cup car, Busch series car, and then a truck all in the same weekend if they're at the same track. Whereas right. Now, because of the single lug to the 5 lug, they're not going to have them flip-flop like that. So you're going to have a separate pit crew for the Busch, and your cup guys are only going to be cup guys. So that's going to be it for them. They're going to have to be paid more now to make up for the money they can't make by moonlighting in the other 2 series. So it's like, sure, it sounds like it's going to save money because you're going to have less people, but now you're going to have more expense because now each guy's going to need to be paid more because they're not going to be able to. So it's, you know, this year will be similar to when the COT debuted, and even more so because there's more things different with this than the COT. The COT, they just essentially made the car wider, added foam to it, and that ugly wing on it, which actually made it look more stock at the time, but it just didn't work for stock car racing at all. Like, it was just awful.
It was terrible.
But I mean, like, the chassis and the engine and the drivetrain was all the same, whereas this is so different, you know, and the transmissions are different. The entire drivetrain is essentially different, you know.
I also like that, you know, this car, there ain't much, you know, jettisoning with 2-team tandems anymore. That was kind of the thing drove me nuts for a while with NASCAR, is like, especially after the Car of Tomorrow would come out, and like after the Talladega repave, you could like get a 2-car tandem and almost approach Bill Elliott's record for speed there.
I mean, the only thing that stopped those guys from running longer tandems was cars overheating.
Yeah.
I mean, all you got to think of back to is the race where, I know Jimmy Johnson technically won, but Dale Jr. won that race for him.
For him, because he shoved the whole fuck.
Even as he's getting loose down there, as he's going 4 wide, you know, 4 tandems wide, he's just still weighing into him, just like, all right, we're going. Like, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Like, you're going to win or you're going to finish sideways. Take your pick. So keep it straight. Tandem. And you saw it from Brad Keselowski. Like, if you even just bump them wrong, these cars get upset enough that you're not going to be able to tandem like that. So that was good to see. It seemed strange, though, that they were the bump drafting was working better in the corners than on the straightaway. Like, that was strange. And that's part of, I think, where Brad Keselowski was struggling, because any of those guys who've done it for a while are used to the opposite,
where they get shoved into the corner and then they let off.
So that was unique. It'll be interesting to see. Like I said, I think this week we'll learn more than we did last week about the car, to be honest.
100%.
Well, I think I'm pretty much out of stuff I think, like I said, it was kind of a dead week in sports, but we still filled more than an hour. So thanks, man. Really appreciate it.
No problem.
You can see right there at Tyler Allen on Twitter. Like I said, the Anomalies podcast. Anything else you want to plug while you're on here?
Go listen to Jet Ski's episode because we have a song that he graciously gave us that's not going to be put out for 2 weeks that closes the show.
Yes, that was it. And again, it is a good song. Trust me, you're gonna want to be ahead of the curve on this one. So yeah, tell a friend.
Because we're the only spot that has it, at least for the next couple of weeks until he gets it up there.
Yep. And that way, when it comes out, you can help it blow up. And then also, you can find me on Twitter at SportsGuyJason. Like I said, probably have an Instagram out there that I never use. I have a TikTok that I literally post nothing on. And again, be a friend, tell a friend about this show. We're new, we're growing. Like I said, I have some ideas on things I might want to do differently going forward that'll work well for both this, for the podcast audio version, and for YouTube content. But until next week, peace out.